This is John Williams. We're produced by Pete Zimmerman on the Wintrust Business Lunch. We're here weekdays from noon until 1. Yesterday, it was Terry Savage taking your calls. Today, on Thursdays, we usually take a look at the jobs report. We'll do that today with Farron Dogs, the CFP, the founder and CEO at Harrison Wallace Financial Group, harrisonwallace.com. You know, Farron, it does seem like people pay more attention to this number now than in the past. I think you'd agree with that, right?
I would, John. How are you doing today?
Yeah, really well. And I suppose
good.
It is all because of the pandemic. What happened to the jobs? Mm-hmm. Then when and in what numbers do they come back? Where are we
right
now? How's it going?
Well, I think we're starting to see some of the initial claims come down as evidenced by the reports. And part of that is due, I believe, to some of the state and federal programs going away in early September. So I think we're finally starting to see some of the results of that. We are also starting to see employers be more competitive with their wages and benefits. And so I think that is attracting some new workers to the workforce that may have been sitting on the sidelines, while they were, potentially collecting from some of those other programs. So we are consistently seeing a decline in those initial jobless claims, which is great. Obviously, it's good news. There is such a worker shortage. Mm-hmm. But interestingly, there's still like 5 million fewer people working right now than pre-pandemic. And so there seems to be quite a disconnect there since there are so many job openings. And I believe some of that is a result of significant consumer savings. I mean, I witnessed it in my own practice. For clients that were taking distributions on a normal basis, were basically calling and saying, I'm really not spending that much money, and you don't need to send me anymore because I'm actually saving money. And I think there's a little bit of a residual effect going on there. Also, I think the consumer dynamic has changed a bit. I think the desire for material goods, material items and things has waned a little bit. We're moving into a generation that wasn't about, buying collectibles and having two houses and that type of thing, to a more simplistic lifestyle. So yeah. maybe the need and the demand for the person to have that double income is not necessarily there like it was 10, 15 years ago.
That's a tough pivot if you're a brick and mortar store, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is. It really is. It's got to be tough for them out there, because not only are they dealing with supply chain issues and inflation issues on those products that they're trying to put on their shelves, but now they're also having to compete with bigger companies for wages and to attract that solid worker. So the smaller companies are really getting pinched from all angles.
And while you said that there are more people going off the rolls, I don't know that they're necessarily going to be waitresses or clerks at stores. I was sharing with our audience earlier my experience at Whole Foods, which I think you pay a premium for the great products and the pretty good service. And wow, were they struggling to staff that store. People just don't seem to be going back to $19 an hour jobs.
No, they're not. I think where we're seeing it is, you see a lot of mid-level positions that are finally getting filled.
Yeah.
I have several clients that have, mid-sized companies, and they're finally being able to fill those, account executive positions and those types. But I would agree, I think on the service sector, there still is a big struggle out there, especially, with hotels, restaurants, the whole hospitality industry.
Yeah.
Not only that, they've been dealing with fits and starts too. They started opening and then the Delta variant hit. So it's been a real struggle for them, and just having some consistency with their employees has really been a challenge.
One last question, Farron. Mm-hmm. Janet Yellen said the other day that businesses may have to pay more, but it's going to be good for workers. So that's how you create inflation. And I guess my question is, will the workers come out ahead? Will they, with higher wages, be able to afford the products and services they want? Will they have more money to spend?
Well, that's a really great question, and I did hear her say that too. And while, of course, it's great to see wages on the increase, but that has, you know, that payment to that employee has to come from somewhere. And, you know, it's either going to come out of corporate profits, corporate earnings. And if the cost of goods continues to increase, it's going to be more challenging not only for the employer to pay those wages. Maybe they'll pay higher wages to fewer employees. That might be one way they adjust.
Right.
But to your point, you know, with inflation, I mean, beef is up 11% year over year. If you're getting a 5% increase in your wages, but your consumer goods are going up 10, 11, 12%, you're really not even keeping up with that wage or the inflation pressure.
Farron Dawg, CFP, founder, CEO at Harrison Wallace Financial Group. Okay, Farron, we'll talk again. Thanks for your time today.
Thanks, John. Harrison, I appreciate it. Thank you.
You betcha. HarrisonWallace.com. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch. Ian Schur, a regular guest from CNET, joins us. Hi, Ian.
How you doing?
Pretty good. The former president, Donald Trump, is launching a new social network. What's the platform this is going to be on?
Yeah, it's called Truth Social, which some people will cheer at and others will chuckle at. And it's an interesting idea. Essentially, what he wants to do is that after being kicked off of Twitter and essentially suspended from Facebook and other places following the January 6th riots and everything that he said during that time, he has decided that instead of trying to convince Twitter to let him back on, which he threatened to sue them over, he has decided to create his own social network. And this whole organization he's created called Trump Media and Technology Group is not just a social network. I mean, if you read their pitch deck, because now they're also a public company on Wall Street, you can actually see that they're hoping to take on Disney because Trump thinks he can make better movies, and also to create web services to compete against Amazon because he thinks he can do that stuff better too. So it's going to be interesting to see how this ends up going.
So would it be an app? I mean, how do you access the platform? How do you interact with him or read his tweets, if you will?
Yeah, so Truth Social will be the name of the social media thing, and it will be an app. You can actually sign up on the App Store for the iPhone now to pre-order, although he hasn't said how much you'll pay or if it'll be free or whatever else. But you can get alerted when it becomes public, which will be next year in the beginning of the year. He has allowed some kind of media personalities to join up now and kind of set up their accounts and whatnot. And, you know, one of the things that it looks very similar to is Twitter. And it's very clear that a lot of the inspiration he has is from the social media networks he's enjoyed using. And look, Twitter was one of his most powerful megaphones, so it's not surprising that he wants to do this.
And then I suppose he's got a lot of people saying, attaboy, you can do it. Powerful people often have a bunch of those kinds of people around them. I wonder if, in fact, he's biting off more than he can chew. I mean, a social media platform is an enormous undertaking, and it sounds like that's not all that he's after here.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you. For what it's worth, if we, you know, we do have one measure of people's belief in how he can do, which is the actual public stock, which is under the ticker DWAC, DWAC, which you can kind of think probably is a political kind of thing against Democrats. And right now, the stock is up almost 273% so far today. They announced it last night. So at least some people believe in him and believe that it's going to become something. I like I said, I'm very curious to see what it turns into. I certainly plan to sign up because I've signed up for all of these things. I'm on Parler. I'm on a Gab. I try them all because, you know, this, no matter what I think of how these platforms work, it's important to understand what they're doing,
yeah.
Especially to help people like you. And so I'm definitely going to be watching very closely.
Well, he could probably make a living at it if 70 million people signed up for it, and we know 70 million people voted for him. Facebook is going to change. It's not going to change its name, is it?
Well, it's going to be interesting. So, you know, the news came out earlier this week that Facebook is planning to at least change its name in some way. So it's not like suddenly we're not going to be calling it Facebook or that they're going to get rid of their blue app. But instead, what's happening is that Mark Zuckerberg, the CEO, I can respect the fact that he feels frustrated by the last few years of him being under intense scrutiny. And he wants to draw more attention to the positive things that he believes he's doing, like virtual reality work, right? Getting a screen so close to your eyes that you think you're in the virtual world, right? Futuristic stuff. Or helping, developing countries get internet access and stuff like that. So it's odds are that he's going to try and create kind of a holding company, very similar to what Google did back in 2015. Google is not actually Google. I mean, it is Google, but it's owned by this larger holding company called Alphabet. Which also does other stuff like self-driving cars and whatnot. So that's kind of where it's probably headed, but it was not, when the news broke about it, a lot of people on the internet, of course, laughed at him and said that it's not going to be that easy to get out from all the scrutiny.
Yeah.
Just changing your name.
No, I'm not Facebook. That's somebody else. We're something else.
Yeah.
Ransomware is in the news this week. A couple of stories. What are you noticing about the business of ransomware?
Yeah, this is something that we've been talking about more and more. So last week, the White House brought together more than 30 countries to talk about ransomware as a threat to national security. Notably, Russia was not part of that conversation, probably because it is identified as one of the worst purveyors of the stuff. But so far this year, nearly $600 million of ransomware payments have been made, wow, according to one survey. And that's a lot of experts believe a gross undercount, because a lot of companies typically don't want to admit that they've been hacked, and if they can just sweep it under the rug, they do. So this is an ongoing and growing problem, and something I'm very curious to see what the government ends up trying to do about it.
Yeah, no kidding. Ferrara is a Chicago-based candy maker. They make candy corns and lemonhead candies that we all love, especially at Halloween time here. Anyway, they were recently hacked, and there was ransomware put up for them. And we asked them, did you pay? How much? Can you talk to us about it? And they said, no. That is, no comment. To your point,
right,
that number may be underreported. I don't know what they did.
Well, and the FBI says, please don't pay these things. Although, of course, a lot of companies don't listen, including Colonial Pipeline, right? They very famously paid tens of millions of dollars. So this is an ongoing problem. And look, I'm curious to see whether or not we're able to get to a point where we understand that, there are places hackers would understandably try to go after, like the Pentagon, but they wouldn't go after, like, a hospital. Because we've actually been able to identify when hospitals get hacked that it actually causes deaths. They can't have as many surgeries. They can't take care of as many people. So people are actually dying as a result of this. It's not just money.
Ian, I never invest in things because I'm a coward and I'm lazy, but the idea of and I don't have the money, but an ETF for Bitcoin traded currency sounds to me to be a really good idea, because you don't know which of these crazy things are going to go. But if you sort of blended it, that might be a safe place to try.
Well, that is definitely what some people are thinking, right? And it's interesting watching this happen. So this is the first time that Bitcoin has kind of ended up on the stock exchange in a way. And, this decentralized currency thing, which if you haven't really gotten into Bitcoin, we have a great explainer on CNET, of course. But, what's interesting here is that this ETF, as you point out, kind of gives people a way to bet on Bitcoin without putting direct money on Bitcoin and having to get a wallet and everything. It is curious also, Bitcoin had gone down quite significantly over the last few months, and now it has jumped up to its all-time highs again, probably on the back of the stock exchange debut. So, look, it says something about where this stuff is going. I don't know the direction, but I do know that this is a step forward for a lot of people who think that, Bitcoin is the future.
Ian sure is the future. He is the editor-at-large at CNET. We'll talk again. Thank you, Ian.
Absolutely. Take care.
Katie Anderson Tedder joins us, the manager at Anderson's Candy Shop, AndersonCandyShop.com, like I don't know that by heart. Hey, Katie, welcome back. How are you?
Hi, John. Nice. Thank you for having us. We're good.
No, thank you for just being. Does it sound like I'm buttering up somebody who runs a candy store?
It works. What do you want?
No. I've been through yours. You guys have had a great relationship with this radio station for a long time, and I've also come through your store and shopped. Anderson's Candy Shop is well known in the Chicago area. It's also been recognized locally and nationally as one of the premier candy producers in the country. So props to you.
Well, thank you very much. Yeah, my father decided, it's got to be probably 45 years ago or so, that WGN was the best place to advertise for our small business and for our candies. And we've been with the station ever since. It's been great. We love you guys. So
you guys have a shop in Barrington. We're talking a lot about Barrington today. In fact, you're not that far from the dentist that I was doing commercials for. So maybe we could work out a thing where we go to your place and then we go to the dentist. And then after the dentist, we go to your place. How does that sound?
That sounds just fine. Yes, hair salons and dentists. A lot of people visit us after as their reward for themselves.
Talk a little bit about the candy you all make. What is it that makes your shop unique?
So we are in our 103rd fall season this year. We make all of our chocolates, creams, caramels, fudges, toffees. We make them by hand in small batches from scratch in our Richmond location. And then we take them to our Barrington store 2 or 3 days a week, so everything is always fresh and turned over. When I say we make things by hand, our buttercream, our English toffee, our caramel starts from bourbon Madagascar vanilla, double A grade Wisconsin butter, whole cream in these kind of 30-pound copper kettles, and gets meticulously made here in small batches by our cooks and my family. And then we take those centers and we cover them in chocolate using hand dipping still. We're one of the few places in the country left that hand dips each chocolate piece. It allows us to use a really, really thick, really rich level of chocolate on it that you can't get if you're using an enrobing machine, like a lot of commercial candy companies. And then everything is just really lovingly hand packaged in our packing rooms in our store here in Richmond. And then put out, we ship all over the country. And then, of course, in our two locations, our Richmond and Barrington stores. And I kind of like to describe it as kind of the difference between a handmade or maybe an Amish piece of furniture versus what you might grab at a big box store.
Yeah, I get
that.
And you
really can taste the quality ingredients and the care that we put into each piece of candy that you're getting.
And you can feel it too when you have it in your hand. But so then how many pieces of candy do you make, or how are you able to keep up?
So we make seasonally for caramel apples. Like this week, I'm making about 1,200 caramel apples this week. I make tens of thousands of pounds of salted caramel during our holiday season. And it's just really, we really rely on a highly trained staff, really dedicated. When we get somebody who we love, we really make them part of our family. And we have the benefit of generations of perfecting the system that we have here. But the biggest thing is we really rely on our customers calling ahead early. We really like to encourage all of our customers to get their orders in by November 15th. So that we can produce ahead so that the candy is ready for when they want it for the Christmas time holidays.
Yeah, no kidding. Do you guys have supply chain issues? I mean, I don't suppose there's a lot of microchips there, but who knows?
We've had some odd things. A couple of weeks ago, I couldn't get granulated peanuts. This past month, I've had a really hard time getting a specific type of sugar I use. We started to see that in my kind of management level here at our shop early in June. We kind of could see the writing on the wall, and we began to really order ahead and project and stockpile a few of our key ingredients in our building here. But the thing that's really hanging my business up is the staffing shortage that I know people are experiencing all over the country right now, trying to find workers who can work, who want to work a full day or a full shift or even more than a few hours a week. I'm just really strapped to find people who I can train and who literally want to apply for a job right now. I had my help wanted sign out like the last 2 months, and I had one person apply, which is unheard of in our kind of area where we are here on the in the Richmond area, right on the Wisconsin-Illinois state line.
Yeah, you're on Route 12 between Crystal Lake and Lake Geneva, right? But then you have a Barrington location on Main Street. Boy, I would think
Barrington, it's been, I've got to say we've had it better because that store is a retail store and we've got three fabulous dedicated employees there who have carried us through. And that community in Barrington is, it's more urban than Richmond, but it's got this wonderful hometown feel.
Yeah.
And it's also kind of a touchstone community for commuters who love to, hop on the train there or grab their candy as they're going to work or coming home for the evening. And so that location has been insulated a little more from what we've had at the Richmond location.
Is it because at Richmond, that's where you actually create the candy?
Correct. Yes.
Do people who work at a candy store like Anderson's Candy get to eat some of the candy? Do they get a little discount on the candy? That would be compelling to me.
Oh, yeah, we all have our employee discount, and I actually require everyone who works here to taste candy every day because that allows us not only to know how to talk about it, sell it, but also catch quality control. But yeah, everybody eats. We tease everybody when you're a new hire, you're going to gain the Anderson's new employee 5 pounds because it's just one for me, one for the box. So
Katie's the manager at Anderson's Candy Shop, andersonscandyshop.com. And yeah, I wouldn't think about your store for Halloween, but I sure would for Thanksgiving or Christmas. So visit their website, just like they say on the radio, get those orders in now. No one is going to be disappointed when they open up a box of Anderson's. Continued success to you all, Katie.
Thank you so much. I do have to say, if you're still looking for that one special Halloween treat, our peanut butter cream bars and our peanut butter crunch bars, that's our candy store's answer to the Reese's peanut butter cup and the Butterfinger. And we still have them in stock. And they will blow your mind. That's what I want in my pumpkin every Halloween. So, and again, thank you so much, John. We love this program that you do and the honesty that you guys have every week when you're talking to different businesses. It's really refreshing and while being optimistic, and we appreciate that.
Well, that's what we try and do here, and I appreciate your candor, too. I mean, candy and candor. I mean, God bless you guys, but it's a struggle for everybody, and I suspect that the business climate is going to change for everyone, but right now it has been a struggle for people making cars to candy bars, and, those
that's
of you that
right.
are slugging away, more power to you. You keep doing what you're doing, Katie.
Well, thank you. You too, John. And flexibility will be the key word for the rest of the year. So.
Yeah. And here we thought it was just going to be the word for 2020, but it has been for 21 as well. Okay, that's Katie Anderson Tedder over at Anderson's Candy Shop. 12:45 on the Wintrust Business Lunch on WGN. More business news with Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. The home price boom appears to have ended in Chicago. The median price of homes sold in Chicago barely moved in September for a second month in a row. The median price of homes sold last month declined 0.7% and was $320,000, according to data from Illinois Realtors. In a 10-month stretch that began in August of 2020, the median home price in Chicago was up at least 10% 8 times. The last double-digit month was May. Prices are not yet flat for the larger metro area, but have been growing less significantly than a year ago. Oakbrook-based Portillo's is now being publicly traded on the NASDAQ. With the ticker symbol PTLO, shares were trading at about $28.52 at mid-morning. Yesterday, Portillo's sold about 20 million shares for $20 each, raising about $405 million. It had marketed the shares for between $17 and $20. Portillo's started in a trailer in 1963 and has grown to 67 restaurants in 9 states. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
I don't know if Steve Alexander is planning on mentioning Portillo's in his business of food, but I know I asked you off the air with their IPO what their valuation is.
Yeah,
did
started
you catch
out
that?
To, yeah, I did. Started out trading today at $20, the first day of trading, and right now trading at $33, I think is the latest number I saw, about a 55% gain on trading today. At $20, the Portillo's valuation, according to Barron's, is estimated that would have been about $1.4 billion. So at $33, they were probably at about $2.1 billion. Valuation.
How about that? How about
that old hot dog stand? Huh?
Yeah,
that's pretty good. I was waiting in line for some coffee and a sandwich, not at Portillo's. I won't say where I was, but saw one of the people behind the counter had just come from the back room where I had seen him handling some trash. He came up to the front to help customers, but before serving anybody, he washed his hands. Yay! He washed them for about 3 seconds with no soap. Clearly, he had not seen the Baby Shark hand-washing training video.
Wash your hands, do-do-do-do-do, wash your hands, do-do-do-do-do.
We have found that participants are failing to properly clean their hands up to 99% of the time before and during meal preparation.
Meredith Carruthers is with the USDA's Food Safety Division and says there are numerous times during cooking that hands should be washed to avoid cross-contamination. But in her study,
hand washing was attempted only 5% of the time that it was required, and about 72% of participants attempted to wash their hands before beginning meal preparation, which is great. But among these hand washing attempts, only 5% of them contained the correct steps for hand washing and were considered successful.
And those correct steps are?
Wet hands with water, rub hands with soap for at least 20 seconds, rinse hands with water, and dry hands using a clean one-use towel.
Or, as Baby Shark puts it,
wash your hands, do-do-do-do-do, grab some soap, do-do-do-do-do, rub your hands, do-do-do-do-do, rinse your hands, dry your hands, do-do-do-do-do, dry your hands.
So, for the love of Baby Shark, if you're in the business of food and are handling what the rest of us eat, please wash your hands properly. Or, I may have to play more of that Baby Shark song. At the Chicago Board of Trade, most of yesterday's gains are gone. Corn is down about 8 cents. Beans are down 20 cents a bushel, and wheat is down a dime. From the farm to your belly, today is National Pumpkin Cheesecake Day. There they go, ruining a perfectly good cheesecake. That's the business of food on 720 WGN.
WGN, Amy Guth follows, among other things, the airline business. What have you got, Amy?
Yeah, so right now, United has said earlier on a call with investors, they were kind of talking about what their strategy is going to be in the year ahead. You know, a lot of eyes have been on what are the airlines going to do to recover, and you know, they've made so many pivots over the last couple of years to just try to kind of keep up and stay on top of things. So what United CEO said on this call with investors was that most of next year, the focus is going to be on expansion outside of the U.S. They said they're going to boost international capacity by about 10%. So I don't have exact cities, but they did say that they would add new routes in Europe, the Middle East, and Africa. They're still describing domestic travel. You know, they're kind of looking for that to be flat because they're still, kind of wondering about how business travel is going to go and seeing leisure travel kind of in fits and starts. But they're really going to be focusing on the international travel. And they cited part of that was just their access of kind of the presence they have at really major airports that contribute to international travel, particularly on the coast and here at O'Hare.
Talk to me about this new grocery store, a Chicago-based company. I guess it's not a grocery store, right?
Yeah, that's right. So Ali Moradi at Cranes has been reporting on this company called Fresh Street, which I think is really interesting. And so the idea is that they're kind of capitalizing on how many people got used to shopping for groceries online during, you know, earlier in the pandemic. A lot of people switched that were maybe thinking about switching, but a lot of people had to switch really quickly. So they're jumping on that wave, and they're you know, it's certainly a good bet because the grocery delivery space is really, really big. It's, you know, swelled to over $8 billion. But they are launching this store, and essentially you will make your order on your app, and it'll show you in real time what's out of stock or unavailable, and then you'll pick up your order at one of 10 locations. So they're opening the first one at Lincolnwood, but they said that they aim to have 10 more up with it. You know, ASAP was kind of the feeling that they conveyed to Cranes. They said it's just pickup for now. They're not going to get into delivery because they said their data was increasingly showing them that consumers are getting more sensitive to delivery fees. So they're really just going to kind of focus on that pickup space.
I can imagine that. But then even though you go to pick it up at a location, you don't ever go into that location. It's not a store you're going to push a cart in.
That's right. That's exactly right. You will drive up, you will get your groceries, and off you go.
Amazon is launching in-store pickup for local businesses. What's that all about?
Yeah, so The Verge has been reporting on this and some other stories that I hope to talk about today. But one of the things that they're launching is this new kind of feature. It's called local selling. And so a lot of times when we're on Amazon, you'll see that if something ships right from Amazon and it's Prime eligible, or it'll say, you know, sold by a third party seller, and it kind of shows their name. If that seller is in your area and part of that local selling network, it'll give you the option for in-store pickup. And part of that is probably, I'm sure, a welcome move for people in the logistics space and the shipping, just how much it has been so jammed up and how long it takes to get things we order now. For example, if there's a store in your neighborhood that's using this local selling option and you order products from them, you get to pick, hey, I can wait a couple of days for shipping, or you know what, I'll pop over, and you can kind of pick your time frame that you want to go over there and bypass shipping logistics entirely and just swing by and pick it up, along with your groceries, apparently.
Well, your last two stories have that theme, don't they? I mean, I was at a Nordstrom the other day, or a Macy's, and they have shelves of items that people have ordered that they're going to go pick up. They're not going to, I mean, it's kind of a hybrid, isn't it? But that does seem to be the way this whole thing has pivoted, if you will.
Yeah. Absolutely. I know the grocery stores near me, every time I go in, it seems like there's more space devoted to people, you know, picking up and bagging groceries and setting them on the shelf for people to just kind of swing through and pick them up. So people are, you know, people have been making this change of wanting to kind of maybe spend a little less time in stores and take advantage of just being able to pick things up.
Amy Guth on the Wintrust Business Lunch. We'll visit next week. Thank you, Amy.
Sounds good. Thanks so much.